Welcome to Stupid Not Stupid. I'm Matt, here with my man Jason, the co-host who always keeps digging, no matter how deep a hole he finds himself
in. That's right. That's the first rule of holes, man. When you're in one, keep digging.
Keep on digging. You'll hit rock bottom one of these days, I'm sure, Jason. I mean, that's what this podcast is all about, right? Helping you find your rock bottom.
That's right.
Yeah. Welcome to our, you usually know this, what number episode?
42.
We're at 42. Should we do something when we get to 50?
Well, actually, I kind of like being at the 42nd episode because, you know, that is the meaning of life, the universe, and everything.
Oh, yeah. Right? Okay, so we're obviously doing the wrong topic now.
Right.
For this. Okay. Well, the reason that I was asking if you knew what episode we were at is I feel like it's been a minute since we've done a show recap. And since this topic was chosen randomly and doesn't really have any kind of hard science or anything meaningful or useful to humanity to discuss, I'm sure we'll get lots of downloads on it. So lots of new listeners coming in who don't understand what we're doing. So as I have done the handful of times, Jason, that we've gone through this exercise of explaining the format of the show, I'll give you the first opportunity to share your thoughts on what it is you think we're doing here.
Oh, I've had no idea what we were doing here since we first started.
So
it's been totally opaque to me from episode one.
So usually what we do is either through some sort of argument, some sort of random pop culture reference that we see on TV or something we start, you know, fighting about during a battle at the arcade. We just get a microphone in front of us and we try to decide stupid or not stupid. We just hash through the logistics of an argument and see which one of us comes out on top. Although we're not necessarily always on opposing sides.
That's true. We've had a couple where
we generally disagree as a rule.
Yeah. That's sort of the point.
Okay.
The other thing is at some point I think it would be fun, like maybe for the 50th episode, we'll just go through and compile all the lists of topics that we decided not to do.
Okay, I'm into that one. And then we should be forced to do them all in the 100th episode.
We'll do little 5-minute episodes.
Yeah, like on the 100th episode, we have to do all the topics in like 5 minutes that we didn't do. Okay. All right. Well, it seems so much less, I don't know, complicated or interesting when we describe it in such pedestrian terms. I don't know. I feel like we were doing something special here, but right. I guess not. Well, the other thing that we do besides stick to a loose format of arguing about if a particular idea is stupid or not is we share our drinks. Yes. So why don't you share what you got over there, Jason, so all the boys and girls at home can drink along.
So I was recently in Columbus, Ohio, for reasons that will remain undisclosed, visiting my dad. And we stopped by a liquor store, and as I am wont to do when I'm in places outside of my home, I like to try the local fare. And so at the liquor store, I asked them if they had any bourbon from Ohio.
I was gonna say, the strip club wasn't open.
That's
so
right.
Then you went to the liquor store. Yeah.
And we found this company called Magnolia that does bourbon in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And I bought a bottle there the first time. This was back in November. It was some of my favorite bourbon I've ever had. It was absolutely delicious, but it was aged in an oak barrel. And when I was back just recently, I went to go pick up a bottle for us to promote on the show, and they didn't have the oak barrel stuff. So this is just sort of their standard straight up Magnolia bourbon from Ohio. And it's actually, I think it's actually really good.
I like it. Magnolia bourbon, Twitter shout out coming your way.
Yes.
So be prepared for your sales to at least marginally increase.
Yes. Almost recognizably. And then because of the ridiculous topic that we're doing, I could think of nothing more American than this topic. So drinking a Budweiser.
I think it's funny that you are doing that. First of all, I'll say I just wanted to out-American you. So I'm sharing the bourbon with you. But instead of the Budweiser, I have a Smirnoff Ice Red, White, and Berry edition with an American flag label on it. So in your face, Jason, hashtag patriotism. But
my can of Budweiser, instead of Budweiser, it does say freedom.
So before I say our stupid, not stupid question, I just want to preface it by saying this actually isn't a very American idea or endeavor. The countries that I came across in the brief amount of research that I did for this topic that have attempted the feat that we're going to query this week are Russia. I'm sorry. Yeah, it would be Russia at that point, Germany, and Japan. The United States hasn't attempted what we're going to be talking about.
Hmm.
At least that we know about.
That we know about.
Yeah.
So I would argue And I will be curious to see what you have to say about those three countries, because I actually don't know that much about this topic at all. But just the idea of it seemed like something that super only American. The United States.
Like if Trump got a second term, we definitely would have tried
this, sure. Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe we should stop keeping everyone in suspense and hit them with our stupid question for this week, or really this month, based off the cadence that we're putting the episodes out. Stupid or not stupid, Jason, we could reach the center of the Earth. And we is not necessarily you and I, although I don't want to rule that out. But I mean humanity as a whole. Like as a species, could we reach the center of the Earth? That's the question.
So for me, the question isn't whether or not we could, and that's stupid or not stupid. I don't think at the moment we could. But the question is, why the hell would you?
Well, we definitely should hit that on the way through. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to change the question.
Yeah.
But we should definitely talk about that on the way through, because there are some reasons to do it, but then it's kind of this episode is going to be very similar, I think, to two episodes we did. The Could We Deflect an Asteroid episode. We're going to have some crossover there, and Mars in Our Lifetimes. So catch both of those of these kind of top. If you think this discussion is interesting, those ones had much more information and much more science in them. So if you found this intriguing but disappointing, I recommend those two episodes. But you're going to run into, I think, a lot of the same conundrums that we hit in those in terms of a raw resource extraction potential. But at the same time, the destabilizing effects to the economy that if we actually pulled this off, it's going to be a bit of a double-edged volcano.
You had my attention. Now you have my interest. Like, I have no idea where we're going with this at all.
Okay. Well, have you ever read Journey to the Center of the Earth? Is that Jules Verne? Is that who the author?
I believe it is, but there's something in the back of my head going, maybe not. I think it is. Yeah.
Did you ever read the book as a kid or?
I'm sure that I must have, but like it's in there with a bunch of other great sort of pre sci-fi classics.
Yeah.
10,000 Leagues Under the Sea, you know, which by the way is actually the other side of the center of the Earth if you measure it. Yeah. So it is a classic literary work that, I think everybody's read at some point.
Yeah. So I've read it. Scenes from the book stuck with me. The fact that they get to the center of the Earth and it's an ocean with like a sky and it's like basically they're outdoors again. There's dinosaurs everywhere.
Yes. By the way, if all of that was true, everyone on the surface would be dead because we would have been cooked by solar radiation because we would have no magnetic field.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But I just remember when I was a kid, I had read that book, and so all that imagery was stuck in my head, and I didn't understand science yet. So I was like, "Oh yeah, sure, that spoon feed me that gullible sci-fi stuff. That's that's totally real." But I think I've mentioned on the show before. I didn't realize it at the time, but I had sort of a non-traditional upbringing in terms of my family structure, and so my grandpa was really the guy who was like around all the time.
Yeah,
and so he would give me like random mundane tasks to do that like I didn't understand weren't real. And so I spent like a large, like a non-zero number of hours in my childhood trying to dig a hole to China because my grandpa literally gave me a shovel and he's like, go over there. This is the spot. And he like showed me the spot to dig. And he's like, let me know when you get to China. And so I just started digging.
His goal was not for you to get to China. His goal was for you to go to bed at a reasonable hour.
I think it was to leave him alone. But I remember like I have very vivid images of my childhood. One of like digging this hole, and I can see it in my mind's eye, the exact spot like that where I would dig the hole. And then I also remember having read Journey to the Center of the Earth, like picturing all the things I was going to run into. And then my image of China, like in my head from like the 13 channels that our antenna TV got, being like, oh, I wonder what it's going to be like when I get there. And I think I made it about like 8 feet,
which is an impressive feat.
But then the other thing he did to mess with me is once I got to a certain depth and my grandma finally got like sick of him making me dig this pointless hole, he's like, all right, fill it back in. But then I filled it back in. And obviously like I couldn't fill the hole all the way back in with the dirt I was putting back in. And so then he sent me out to try to figure out where the other dirt went. So I was like, I just remember like standing outside for hours being like, where is the rest of this dirt? Like, what am I going to do?
That's great.
So that's my experience trying to tunnel.
Well, basically, I'm going to do the same thing to your son. So it'll all come full circle.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Well, that makes sense to me. Well, that time I spent digging, Jason, on the surface of the Earth took place on one of the several layers of the Earth. So what I thought we could do here is just go layer by layer and kind of cover, you know, if either you or I or our species. I'm not sure which one has a greater collective intellect, the two of us or the species as a whole, really gave it the old college try. Like, if my grandma doesn't intervene and stop us from digging,
right?
Could we get to the center of the earth? So you just want to go layer by layer.
Sure. And it's funny you said the old college try, because I suspect that people with a college education would not be the ones doing the digging.
Okay. So layer number one, the crust. Everyone knows the crust, right? Yep. It's the thin veneer of civilization around our molten balloon on which we all exist.
That's right. Yeah. It's the thing that everybody views as the rock solid surface upon which we live. And many people actually believe is just a big flat surface.
Right. God. Please, if you're listening to this and you believe in flat earth, or you know someone who does, please put them in touch with us. For all of the flat earth conspiracy people on the internet, none of them are willing to agree to actually come on the show. They're like keyboard ninjas, like typing away in the comments section on the bottom half of the internet, but they won't come on our podcast.
Yeah. Matt's been trying to get that episode for well over a year at this point. Yeah.
So yeah, the crust is 5 to 70 kilometers thick, depending on where you are. There's more variation in the crust than any other layer that we're going to look at. The thickest layers are on land, and the thinnest layers are under the sea, although the sea layers are actually more dense, from what I came to understand, except for at the points where tectonic plates are interacting, and you have stuff coming up from under the surface to create new layers of the mantle. So the thinnest part of the Earth's mantle is 5 kilometers thick, and that's at Hawaii.
Yep, which would make sense.
Yeah, so that's the thinnest part of the Earth's crust.
Which also actually sits sort of on the
fault line
between two tectonics, right?
Right. So the science checks out so far, yes. Jason. The crust makes up, though, only 1% of our Earth's mass. And we're going to get into some pretty substantial chunks of the Earth's mass as we go through our journey here.
I remember
to the center of the Earth.
Being a kid and first seeing a diagram of the Earth and realizing that the crust of the Earth, like by comparison, is so unbelievably thin. Like as a kid, I remember thinking, well, why don't we just fall through?
Yeah. All right. Well, so for nostalgia's sake, then, you know, there are different places we could start our journey where we could start digging. I mean, we could take advantage of the ocean. We could, you know, dive down the Marianas Trench and kind of get a head start. That's what they do. I mean, we're going to make a lot of references, I think, to the movie The Core in the course of this. And I'm sure we'll mix some dialogue in, some cameos as we go here.
Freaking terrible movie that
really
was.
I thought it had some staying power, man. I thought it holds up. And it's got like a star-studded like sci-fi cast.
Oh, it does.
It's got like everybody.
Yeah, but it doesn't make it good.
I thought it was like Armageddon Light.
yet another really awful film.
I don't know. I watched parts of it again today in preparation for this episode, and I thought it holds up. It delivers on what it promises to deliver.
Fair enough. Yeah. Because it certainly did not promise to educate anyone. Right?
Okay. Well, we're not going to do what they did in The Core. So I was hoping for nostalgia's sake, Jason, since I've already got us like 9 feet.
Right.
Like to start. Could we start at my grandma's house? Like the hole I already begun? Can we just assume that's where we are?
See, it's funny because I was going to suggest, just to save your grandfather some time, that we start in China.
All right, so we're going to start with the hole I already started to dig, and we're going to start, you and I are going to start shoveling away. So just spades and shovels to start. And since Yikes. we're manly and energetic men, we'll start digging. And the first kind of landmark we'll hit on our journey is the 2.5 kilometer mark. That's where the first kind of interesting pit stop will be. It's where we'll take our first water break,
right?
I think. Yeah, right around the 2.5 kilometer mark. That is the deepest that any fossil has ever been discovered. So we're not only in the territory that, you know, humanity has dug to, excavated at, some people are like not necessarily living at, but working at, depending on where they are, especially relative to other points in the mantle, since it has varying degree, or other points in the crust, since it has varying degrees of thickness. We haven't really accomplished anything earth shattering here. But we're at the 2.5 kilometer mark. So this is where we're going to stop seeing all the interesting fossils and evidence of prehuman civilizations. Catch our prehuman civilization.
Yes. Yeah. So at 2.5 kilometers, I know if you go up from sea level, 2.5 kilometers is about where it starts getting cold and the air starts getting a little bit thin. As you're going down at 2.5 kilometers, I don't know that the air pressure is necessarily getting dangerous or oppressive, mm-hmm. but it is probably getting warmer.
Well, you have to keep in mind, though, Jason, it's not the whole of humanity. It's just you and I. And right. given our strenuous cardiovascular training regime, I think that we're preconditioned for the conditions that we're going to be facing. So I actually wouldn't be worrying about that quite yet.
Clearly, you didn't see me overheating mowing the lawn today. Right?
All right. So you got your water break. It's time to get back to work. We're going to keep on digging. We're still just in the crust. The next point we're going to hit is
By the way, if we start at your grandmother's house, I'm just trying to think like what the makeup of the crust was at that. Like at 2.5 kilometers, I assume we haven't hit like a tranche of iron or like mm-hmm. bedrock or something so that we can actually continue to dig with shovels and spades. Like
we got a big garage out at my farm, Jason. Gotcha. So we got any tool we need, we have access to at this point.
Oh, I wouldn't worry.
And okay. money's no object because it's you and I, Jason. We have right. lots of disposable income here. Yes. So don't sweat the little things, Jason. Just dig.
I'm just like trying to throw a little science in here. So we would probably need some blasting, some dynamite.
Yeah, that's what we really did. Let's be honest. Yes. We got about 3 feet with the shovels and then bought a bunch of dynamite.
Right.
So we're just blasting away. No big deal.
When we get hungry, we go to the pond and throw some in there for fishing. Yeah.
Well, speaking of access to things we may be able to harvest, when we hit the 3.6 kilometer point, that's where we're going to start to say goodbye to life as we know it. So the deepest living organism
deepest bacteria.
It's actually not bacteria, because I'm assuming you and I can't subsist on bacteria.
Okay, so that does go.
That goes deeper so far as we know. But at 3.6 kilometers is the last place that we've seen complex organisms. It's actually pretty recently discovered in the early 2000s, something called the devil worm. Yeah, so this thing was just discovered, and I was reading a Nat Geo piece about it. I got a little sidetracked. Because I found it so interesting and the picture of it was terrifying. But the scientist who is credited with the discovery gave a quote to Nat Geo, and he said for him, it was like finding a whale in Lake Ontario. That finding something this complex that's millions of times larger than the bacteria it feeds on at this depth and this pressure was something that they never expected to find. Wow. This is not salient to our discussion at all.
No.
Although we could stop and snack on one, I guess.
Right.
I just find it interesting that there's, now people know. The last living thing that you'll see is the devil worm at 3.6 kilometers.
I find it fascinating that, if you're digging to hell, the last creature you find is the devil worm. Right, yeah.
Although, the devil worm could come into play a little bit because we never really said how fast we had to get to the center of the Earth. So I'm going to throw a wrench in kind of probably all of the traditional thinking that we're bringing to this scenario, Jason, and say, what if we dug to the center of the Earth super slowly over millions of years? And the reason this is interesting is because one of the things that the scientists who discovered the devil worm have done is map its genome. And what they discovered when they mapped the devil worm's genome is that it has a gene HSP70, which all living organisms have or complex life has. And it's the gene specifically responsible for repairing heat damage, except this one has 85 times more instances of this gene comparatively than like humans do. As we know it. And as they looked at those genes, they all seem to be copies of each other, the different genes that they have that are repairing heat damage. So this is an effect. It's theorized that this is an effect of evolution.
Right.
Like this is a worm that, got reduced to 1%, and that 1% multiplied and bored a little deeper. And over time has adapted to this high heat, high pressure environment and has become well suited to it. So I'm just saying, Jason, if we dug really slowly, generation by generation, our children's right. children's children, so on and so forth, we'll just become increasingly acclimated to the heat and pressure as we approach breakthrough. So just throwing that out there.
That's true. But I think that there are limits to that, right? Like I know that NASA does a bunch of studies through their astrobiology department that looks at the limits of life on Earth with the idea that we're trying, the concept of astrobiology is you're looking for life elsewhere, but you need to understand what the limits are
sure.
as we have ever witnessed it to figure out where is a good place
to
look.
Yeah, we talked about this in our Life in the Solar Systems.
Yeah, absolutely.
Solar System episode.
Yes, yes. So there is an upper boundary of heat at which like metabolic processes still can happen. And it's not as hot as you, so when you're cleaning NASA spacecraft to fly to another planet, one of the ways that you can sterilize them is you bake them up to about 700 or 800 degrees Fahrenheit, and that will kill off anything biological. So you can put a devil worm in an oven, but if you crank it up high enough.
the devil worm scoffs at your science, Jason. So at this point where the devil worms were discovered, they were actually discovered in the, Upang gold mine in South Africa. So there are people living and working, living, quote unquote,
like,
they're working their shift at this depth under the Earth's crust.
That is some hard work.
There are people down there chipping away, trying to, get the flakes to melt down for your girlfriend's earrings or whatever you're buying that has gold in it. We're at an extreme depth, but we're not beyond the reach of our technology, of our capabilities as a species at this point, at the 3.6 kilometer mark. Okay.
That's really deep.
It's deep.
Yeah.
But it's not as deep as we've gone, Jason. No. How deep do you think the deepest artificial hole on Earth
is? Well, see, and this is fascinating. Like, an artificial hole as opposed to going to the depths of the ocean.
Right.
Right? It's a very different thing.
We've been able to create a tunnel, like the deepest man-made hole on Earth in history.
I would guess it's not 10 kilometers.
Okay.
It's got to be less than
that. And who do you think's responsible for it? Who, if you had to guess? Although I guess I kind of gave this away at the beginning.
And the funny thing is, you said it was Russia and not the Soviets. It sounds like a very Soviet thing
super
to have
Soviet
tried.
Thing, yeah. Well, I don't know. So it is in Russia. It's in Siberia. And it began in the late 70s. So that would be Russia.
That's the Soviets.
That's still Soviet.
That's Soviets till 91. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's about when it stopped too. So from the late 70s to the early 90s, the Kola Super Deep Borehole was dug. And pretty ambitious to name it the Super Deep Borehole at the very outset. I mean, I'd love the moxie to just throw it down and be like, this thing's going to be super deep from the beginning. And they hit a depth.
Sounds like a horrible Russian come online.
A Kola, some guy's ex-girlfriend. Yeah. So the Russians at the Kola Super Deep Borehole, they hit a depth of 7.5 miles. And this is where we need to start getting into like the science of how we're going to tunnel this hole.
Oh, we should probably get into the science of the difference between the metric system. And
Yeah, I guess I did this wrong too, because I think the rest of the stuff I'm going to throw at you is kilometers.
Right.
So just to confuse it.
Yeah, everything we've said so far has been kilometers.
All right. Well, 7.5 miles is where they were. So everyone get your calculators out and do the math. But that's the deepest that we've made it so far. The way they did this was to start with a super large hole and then get thinner as they went down. So it goes from a massive hole. I'm not sure what the diameter was from the hole that they begin with, but from where they begin to do what are called the bore holes. So the holes that branched off kind of like a tree. If you look at a diagram of this thing from the main chamber, they're about 9 inches in diameter. And the deepest they were able to get from those bore holes was the 7.5 miles, which I'm assuming you're going to correct me soon and tell me the number of kilometers. But at that point is where the technology of the early 1990s, not necessarily the technology of today, failed us. And because of the heat and the pressure, they weren't able to continue drilling any further.
So just real quickly, while you were rambling on about it.
You weren't even listening. You didn't catch any of it.
I didn't catch the single thing that you said. I looked it up. 7.5 miles is about 12 kilometers.
Well, you're a better man than I, because I wouldn't have admitted that I looked it up. I would have just lied and said I did it on my fingers and toes real quick.
12.07
kilometers. Oh, okay. So you did the 0.7. You did the decimals in your head. That's what you came up with. Okay. All right. Well, and at the point they gave up, because now we're going to start throwing this in as a variable to the deeper we get, the air pressure, 4,000 times greater than at sea level.
So that was what I was hinting at when we were at 2.5 kilometers, was that you were starting to get a little hotter because the air was going to be more dense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you're 12 kilometers in, it's getting ugly.
That's where the project was abandoned. Before we talk about some of the problems here, the challenges, the technological challenges we're going to face going, you know, deeper than we've ever gone before. And I know you go deep, Jason.
Who you been talking to?
But we should talk about, you know, some of the photos of this thing. It's unbelievable. So when the project was abandoned, they basically just capped it. It literally is like they poured some concrete and put it looks like a submarine hatch on top of it.
Yeah.
And just like welded it shut.
Yeah.
And it's just there. It's just sitting in the middle of a field, the world's deepest hole, like in the middle of nowhere.
I can't remember, like, the diameter of this hole was actually, like, you could fall down it, as I recall. It wasn't like a thin, like, tiny little hole.
You could, if you, like, picked it up on a crane and dropped it down, you could drop a, a car down.
Right.
The principle, like the main shaft.
Yeah.
Now, eventually it gets thinner as you go down to a diameter of 9 inches.
Right.
But the main hole, and we're going to talk
but
about
at that point with the heat and the pressure,
yeah.
the car would be about that
yeah,
size.
It'd be small. It's just a matchbox at that size. Yeah. But yeah, it's just there. Now, there's all kinds of, I won't go down a tangent on this, but there's all kinds of like stories connected to this thing. Remember the, man, I don't remember when we talked about this, but the monster under the lake or something that had been, did we actually do an episode on that? We talked about it, like the creature that, oh no, we were going to do something like a cryptozoology episode or
right,
something. This
right.
is one of the things, but there's all kinds of stories about the Soviets stopped digging because of what they found.
Oh,
or,
nice.
Yeah, or the Barlog was disturbed.
That's awesome. Yeah.
yeah.
Which is also very Soviet.
Yeah.
Well, actually, that's very Russian, Soviet aside. Yeah.
The people who live in the village around there say they hear like wailing and voices coming from the hole and all kinds of strange things. And the Russians stopped digging because of what they found. But it's just hilarious that this thing is just in the middle of a field with a, like, it could just be like a manhole cover. Like, you could walk right by it and not know that you're near this like marvel of engineering. So I just thought that was interesting. Yeah. But the problems that they ran into, the technological barriers that we hit at the 7.5 mile mark, how many ever, you know, communist kilometers that was.
Commulometers.
Yeah, commulometers. How many ever commulometers that was. Are going to be the things we have to overcome if we want to start going deeper. So the first is temperature. We don't have a material that can stand the kind of heat and pressure that you need to drill through. Depending on the material you're drilling through here, you need a different kind of equipment and a different kind of capability. So we're drilling through what geologists refer to as mud at this level. So at this point, the torque that you need to generate means that at the depth we're talking about for the kind of drilling rig you would use for this, for every 10 revolutions of your drill at the surface, you're only getting one revolution at the bottom of your drill bit.
Wow.
So the amount of energy that has to go into actually continuing the revolutions that you need to keep going is extreme. And if you even lose a little bit of that momentum, right, it's almost impossible to get it back up.
You can't back it out.
Yeah. You're right. And so the way you get around that, as I understand it from the, again, very limited research I did, was they try to create pockets of pressure or isolate areas of high pressure and low pressure as you go down the hole. So you create like little chambers that you can drill through, and that helps with the torque. But at some point, it's kind of like the rocket equation we talked about in a previous episode. It just becomes like a self-defeating equation that you eventually can't overcome with drills as we use them today.
Yeah, the rocket equation's a bitch.
So is the borehole equation, apparently.
The gravity equation is not any... Yeah, the gravity and distance equation is not any different.
And the gravity equation, I think, is actually a great way to put this, because pretty soon gravity is going to start becoming a factor, too, the deeper we get. And then the other is, you know, just the diameter of the hole. So to get 7.5 miles, you know, we started with a, like, standard size, I don't know if you're going to drill for oil-sized hole.
Right.
And by 7.5 miles, we were down to 9 inches.
Right.
So to get to the center of the earth, I didn't do the math, but it's going to be a pretty big fucking hole if we're going to use a standard drill.
And it's going to be like a laparoscopic surgical tool at the end. Right?
At the end, exactly. Right. To be able to make the physics work. Now, that's only, to be fair, Jason, that's only if we use the drilling techniques of the late 1990s. We might be able to develop an alternative drilling technique, and we can talk about that as we go, as we lean on the movie The Core a little bit more.
Ooh, is it super dynamite?
Well, that's how we did get started, so it makes sense. So if we were able to keep going past the 7.5 mile mark, switching back to commulometers, if we could get to, and there are some groups out there, countries and I guess scientific expeditions, for lack of a better term, that are attempting to do this right now to develop the drilling technology to be able to pull it off, to get to the 40 kilometer mark, that's where we got to go to leave the crust, to break through that 1% layer that is the veneer on which we all live. And the countries trying to do that are Germany and Japan. The U.S. hasn't bought in so far as we know. So
40 kilometers, and I'm just, this is spitballing it, that is somewhere a little over 30 miles deep.
Yeah. Now, you know, we don't necessarily need to start at my grandma's house. We could, you know, work from the Marianas Trench, like make it a little bit easier on ourselves, but
we do and we don't. So this is something that I wanted to bring up, because this idea that the crust is much thinner at the lowest points, which are under the ocean. The problem is the ocean is full of water,
right?
Which is much denser than air.
Yeah.
So this brings the gravity aspect of this in. If you get 7.5 miles deep and you're just dealing with the weight of the water, the Earth's atmosphere, air on top of you, it starts to get really hot, and it's oppressive. It's, you know, very thick air, but it's not crushing you. At the bottom of the Marianas Trench, all that, the weight of that water on top of the weight of that atmosphere, you start talking about massive pressures that will turn a human into the size of an egg instant. So you have entirely different engineering concerns if you want to drill at the bottom of the sea than you do if you're just drilling through ground.
So it's actually pretty good that you brought up that concept of trying to deal with the pressure of the water too and the ocean here, because once we break through the crust into the mantle, the first problem that we're going to deal with is the shift in the state of matter that we're dealing with. And in the upper parts of the mantle,
from mud to very, very, very hot liquid.
Mud to magma is the transition that we're going through here. And the way that I saw one scientist describe it is, magma is going to be really easy to penetrate. But if you want to understand what it's going to be like to dig through, it's really simple. Just go to your bathroom, fill up your bathtub with water, take a spoon and dig to the bottom. that's what you're going to be dealing with. And that gets to the real physics problem that we're going to face with drilling technology as we know it, as we hit the mantle. And that's the hole filling conundrum. The hole filling conundrum is, you know, most drill bits that we use now have a bore that carries the material that you're drilling up to the surface so it can be taken away.
When you hit magma, that's not what you want.
That's not really an option anymore. So we're going to have to
find. The big problem is once you hit magma, it's all pressurized down there. You have just basically created a volcano.
That's an argument that a lot of folks who think this is impossible actually bring up in terms of creating the volcano issue. But that actually probably wouldn't be a problem because the change in air temperature that you're going to have as that stuff tries to release and move up the valve will cool it to the point that you're just going to backfill the hole behind you. And that's kind of what they do in the core.
Sure.
With the laser system, the laser drilling system that they develop. But we can talk about that in a second.
I think it would depend on the diameter of the hole, right? Which, again, at a very small diameter will backfill very quickly.
Right.
But if you're talking about drilling to – the idea is that you're drilling to the center of the Earth, as you said, and we start with this massively large hole.
Right.
By the time you hit the mantle, it's still pretty big. And then I think – I don't know what the science is there, but I can – or the engineering at this point. But it would be much harder to see it backfill very quickly.
Well, the good news is we don't have to deal with the magma for very long because while all of this stuff is at extreme temperatures – once you get through the upper mantle, the pressures are so extreme that even though the temperature continues to increase, the pressure has increased even faster to the point that things that are molten magma, so liquid rock essentially, are turned back into a super solid.
Right.
Because the pressure is so high. So we'll be big, even though it will be hotter than a liquid, we'll be hitting a solid surface again.
Yeah, yeah. No, and this is an aspect of physics that I think people don't usually understand just because we never deal with this in the real world.
Right. But we can skip around in states with the pressure's high enough.
Right. But like the idea that there are a lot of current theories at the moment that like the center of Jupiter is actually solid hydrogen. That's something that we can't
wrap our heads around
on Earth. We've been trying for years because it'd be amazingly cool rocket fuel. Because it turns out if you could actually pressurize, like theoretically, you could pressurize hydrogen to the point where it's a solid. When you take the pressure off, it remains a solid. It doesn't just like shatter or become an explosive or something, which would be fantastic for rocket fuel. But we have been trying now for like over 30 years to pressurize hydrogen into a solid and have yet to achieve it. So it's still theoretical. The kinds of things that we do see this working with, diamond.
So this is actually a solid point, Jason. So again, you're hitting all the greatest tectonic hits here because this point in our Earth's density is where all diamonds actually come from.
Yeah.
This is where diamonds are created.
I didn't realize that that's where they came in terms of depth, but that's interesting.
Yeah. So the few diamonds that make it to the surface are just like pebbles. They're remnants of the material that's created at this depth within the Earth that through all volcanic activity has worked its way up like a zit to the surface.
Right. Yeah, because a diamond is basically just carbon massively compressed.
Yeah. So this is where we would run into diamonds. So this is, remember we talked about this. So if you could pull this off, if you could just get to the mantle, the amount of rare materials, whether it just be valuable because of rarity or there's some kind of like useful practical application from a manufacturing perspective, I mean, there's probably more rare earths accessible to us in the mantle, then is it going to be easier to get them in space in the mantle? I don't know.
That's an interesting. So first of all, like diamond is not really something that's worth going
after.
There's
a lot of other stuff that's probably
down there.
Because
carbon is readily available on the surface, and we already know how to compress that into diamond. Like we do that industrially. And you can buy, even for jewelry, manufactured diamonds today, which I think is actually way cooler than having, you know, people in Africa doing horrible things in diamond mines. So I think that's a more viable industry, personally. But there are a lot of other rare earth minerals that are really hard to find. You know, things like platinum and, you know, stuff, nickel.
This is where you're going to find them.
Right. This is where they're created. That's exactly right.
It's either this or
in other places, as you say, in space, where they've undergone these major pressure, temperature interactions that create these things that you basically
can't.
Inside
of a planet that's been like blasted apart.
Yeah, now that you basically can't recreate on Earth at the moment. Yeah.
Well, now we're going
at least on the Earth's surface, on the crust.
Now we're going full core, because I think the core answers this question when they talk about the difference between trying to get to space or drill to the center of the Earth. Because one of the American generals who's trying to solve this dilemma, like, basically says, we went to space, like, we can get to the center of the Earth.
The core is the size of Mars. You're talking about jumpstarting a planet. This is a superheated hyperfluid of molten iron and nickel at 9,000 degrees Fahrenheit, 2,000 miles down, 1,000 miles thick. And the deepest we've ever been is 7 miles with a 2-inch drill bit.
If we can go into space, we certainly...
Well, space is easy. It's empty. We're talking about millions of pounds of pressure per square inch. Even if we somehow came up with a brilliant plan to fix the core, we just can't get there.
Well, no, I remember there was and we often reference Futurama on the show.
Okay, so I saw this too. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And it's so great. At one point, there's an episode where the spaceship gets drugged down. They go out and they're like sitting on the ocean. They get drugged down by some fish because they have a diamond fishing line that they can't cut. And they get drugged down by a fish down to the lost city of Atlanta, which is really funny, having gone to grad school in Atlanta. But as they're getting drugged deeper and deeper into the ocean, and they're just counting, like, we're at...
Depth at 4,500 feet, 4,800, 1,500, 5,000 feet.
Dear Lord, that's over 150 atmospheres of pressure. How many atmospheres can the ship withstand? Well, it's a spaceship, so I'd say anywhere between 0 and 1.
There's another Futurama crossover too. I haven't seen the episode, but I saw reference to it. And this is the point where I think we need to talk about obviously leaving current drilling tech behind.
Yeah.
And we need to get into the realm of unobtainium.
Right.
Jason, is this a term that you're familiar with, as popularized in the normal vernacular of us peasants by the movie The Core? And we'll have them explain it to us.
What do you call this material?
Well, its real name has 37 syllables. I call it unobtainium.
Yeah. Unobtainium.
Mm-hmm.
The unobtainium will take the heat and the pressure and transform it to energy, which in turn reinforces the shell of the ship, you see. So the hotter and the deeper she gets, the stronger she gets, theoretically.
Theoretically,
yes.
But Jason, what is your take on
it? Most people are actually more familiar with it from the movie Avatar, but yes.
Okay. See, I think I've seen like scenes of it. I never sat down and watched Avatar.
So the best description I ever heard was from an ex-military friend of mine. He goes, you know, that movie was chock full of hippie, but it was pretty good.
So what's your take on unobtainium, Jason? How would you define unobtainium?
Unobtainium is a material that we do not currently know how to manufacture or involves scientific principles. I usually see it in terms of superconducting materials.
Exactly.
That we do not currently know how to create in a stable form for any period of time to make them useful.
So this is one of the concept from the core, right? So one of the scientists like cracks the unobtainium code.
Right.
And the deal is the deeper that they get, the higher the pressure, the higher the temperature, the more stable the compound becomes.
Right. So which is not quite what superconductivity
they output the energy by grabbing the energy. This is why, you still got to do Project Hail Mary, because this is kind of the same concept of astrophage when you get to Project Hail Mary, when you finally read that book, and I need you to read it, so maybe we'll do an episode on it. But they harness that energy and then use it to power the laser drill that's at the front of the craft they use to drill through the Earth in the movie The Core. So they're pulling from that energy and pressure to power the laser at the front. So for us to go any further, Jason, we're going to have to agree at 4,000 kilometers right now, where we are together, that you and I'm assuming it's one of the two of us has cracked the unobtainium code.
Right, right. So again, as I think I said at the outset of this, I don't think that we could reach the center of the Earth given the current state of technology. As we've discussed in many episodes, even having done technology assessment professionally for a number of years on pretty cutting edge stuff, I don't think we're anywhere close to this.
Okay.
That doesn't mean that we won't get there. We understand the scientific principle well enough. Once we find a scientific method of getting there, it just becomes an engineering problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a matter of time and resources. It's the science aspect that we have not yet solved that I'm concerned by.
Again, we're going to have to throw another core reference in here because this comes up when they go to the scientist who's designed the theoretical technology that's going to take them to the center of the Earth. They basically say to him, like, how much time do you have to get it ready?
What would it take to get it done in 3 months?
$50 billion.
Will you take a check?
Why don't you use a credit card to get miles?
Right, right. And the fact of the matter is that's not how science works. Yeah. There are, when you're talking about basic science in that regard, it doesn't matter if that had been 180 billion or 180 trillion.
Right.
It doesn't matter the amount of resources you throw at it. It's not necessarily going to make it happen faster. It would take 10 years to train people in the field well enough to understand how to advance it, right? Like, it's that you just can't flip switches like that. And this is one of the things that always irritates me about Hollywood.
let's, for our purposes, and I got to go back and correct one thing because I don't want to do this and we're stupid. I said we were at 4,000 kilometers, really at 400 kilometers now, because 4,000 kilometers is where we're going.
Yeah. I heard that and forgot to correct it. Yeah. Yes.
So we're at 400 kilometers right now. Here in the kind of the shifting density we're moving between to the magma, to the super cool or the super pressurized hot solid magma.
Right.
This makes up 84% of the Earth's mass. So this is 2,900 kilometers thick. So this is where we're going to spend most of our time on our journey.
Yeah. We're not yet at the core, right? This is still...
No, so the core, well, we're about to be because we've been making good time, Jason.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we've really been drilling in our unobtainium drill bit with our laser-guided or our laser-powered drill bit at the front of the
craft. Our magical heat shields.
Yeah, no, it's unobtainium. It's not magic. Come on, man. It's science. So at the 3,000-kilometer point, that's where we break through to the outer core. Not the inner core yet. Don't get excited, Jason. We still got some work to do, but we're at the outer core.
So what temperatures are we talking about here?
So right now at the outer core, we're between 8,000 and 9,000 degrees Celsius. So we're nearing the surface of the sun.
Yeah, yeah. In terms of temperature. Actually, we do know how to do this.
I was gonna try to get you. I was waiting for you to be like, "Oh, it's too hot." And not that many episodes ago, we talked about how to do this.
Yeah.
So we can, this part we can overcome already.
This is fusion reactors, right? Like, mm-hmm. This is, and we're doing a ton of work on this already. So, as I said earlier, this idea about it being a scientific problem versus an engineering problem, this is an engineering problem. And we couldn't do it as we're discussing it right now, but we know what the scientific principles are. And dealing with those kinds of heats in a plasma, we do this all the time in research reactors for fusion with really high temperature plasmas.
Mm-hmm.
And you control those using magnetic fields. Now, the problem is...
We're a little close to the center of a magnetic field at this point, too.
Yes, we are, which means that... magnetic fields generate electrical fields and electrical fields generate magnetic fields. So you end up with all kinds of crazy disruptions there that are really difficult to shield against. But more than that, when you're talking about a fusion reactor, you're talking about surrounding a plasma field with materials that create a magnetic field to contain it. Well, in this, the heat's all around you. You have to figure out how to create a magnetic field exterior to your materials as opposed to interior to your materials. And again, it's an engineering challenge, not a science challenge, but it's a pretty insurmountable one right now.
That's not the direction I thought you were going to go, because just a few episodes ago, we talked about the Parker Solar Probe.
Right.
So obviously the pressure is not as big of a problem with the heat shielding in that one as it would be at this point.
Right.
But from a temperature perspective, the Parker Solar Probe, the shielding on that actually protects the instruments from heat slightly higher,
yeah,
but still higher than what we're talking about here.
And we'll protect it all the way to a much higher temperature than what we're discussing right now, I think.
So this part isn't crazy. From a temperature perspective.
Right. Again, an engineering challenge, not a science challenge, but we're pretty far from here to there.
Well, the next engineering challenge we're going to hit here, besides the temperature, is that at this point, everything is basically iron and nickel.
Yes.
In the outer core. Now, the way they get around this in the core of the movie, not the core of the planet here, is by harnessing the energy that they're pulling in through their unobtainium shell. And centralizing it through this laser at the front, it basically turns everything in front of them to plasma for just long enough for the craft to pass through, and then it is cooling behind them and returning to its normal state. And this is also how you're solving the hole filling conundrum, right? Because you're not sending material back up to the surface. You're just making what's directly in front of you passable for just long enough for you to pass through it. And that's what we'd have to do to get through the nickel and iron.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I've seen this concept actually dealing with ideas of how we would get through the ice crust at Europa.
Mm-hmm.
And it's...
Yeah, you just liquefy it for long enough.
Right. And it's fine if it freezes behind you to a degree. Well, except you still
Yeah, you're going to send your signals back.
Right. Yeah. That's one of the many issues that we've had. That said, the real issue for me here is I don't like doing the math between how much energy you would be generating from your unobtainium to the amount of energy required for a laser to do that. I don't think adds up. I think your orders of magnitude off in the amount of energy you would generate.
Jason,
I
just feel like you don't understand unobtainium. Okay? It has whatever property you need it to have. I mean, come on, man.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's a unicorn. It's magic. Yeah.
Give it the program, Jason.
Yeah. I don't believe any theoretical substance that we have ever looked at, you know, just using basic chemistry and physics to understand there's no return on investment energy wise that gets you to what the math on that would almost be like a perpetual motion machine. It's just not.
Well, we're only 2,000 short kilometers from the core. So you want to quit? Is that what you're saying, Jason? You just want to give up and sit here?
I don't think it's going to be up to us. I think we're just going to die at this point. But yeah, let's pretend.
Shall we continue?
Let's pretend that those unicorns came to save us.
All right. Well, if we were to continue liquefying the iron and nickel in front of us and drilling our craft straight through to the molten rotating, well, what we theorize is the molten rotating core of the Earth responsible for.
Theorize that, but we theorize it kind of like we theorize gravity.
Right.
Like if you look at everything else that the Earth does.
You have to explain magnetism. Right. Yeah. No, I get that. I'm with you. We would break through. We would have breakthrough. We would have Ben Affleck, you know, yelling victory from the rig.
I know that you said it accidentally, but I love the name Ben Affleck.
Affleck is his name.
Much funnier.
Well, at the
Affleck
at the 5,000 kilometer point, and this is where we've been trying to get the center of the Earth, where we break in.
Yes.
Into the iron core. 9,000 degrees, in excess of 9,000 degrees Celsius. I don't think it quite gets, well, we don't know, but theoretically,
we've never gotten a thermometer down there.
Yeah. Right? It doesn't quite get to the surface of the sun. It's like less than 1,000 degrees away, but we're almost to the surface of the sun.
Well, and the sun is really big. And again, that gravity and pressure and heat.
Well, speaking of pressure, we're at 3.6 million times sea level pressure at this point. So our unobtainium is humming. We are at maximum energy efficiency at this point.
And anything inside of that unobtainium is now about the size of a molecule. Like it has been compressed to the point of absolutely no use whatsoever.
Well, that's okay. It's just a drill bit right now. So we haven't sent people yet.
Tiny
drill bit. Just enough room for us to slide some explosives down the hole and detonate our super dynamite, Jason.
Right.
Our super dynamite is going to finish it off for us.
At this point, it would be mega super dynamite. But yeah, just as a comparison, like between the sun and the center of the Earth here, at the sun, you've got temperatures and pressure so great that it's pushing helium and hydrogen atoms together, fusing, causing fusion energy to be created. But at the center of the Earth, you do not have fusion happening.
Right.
Yeah. The pressure is not that great. The temperatures are not that
great. Not great enough. Well, it's
correct.
Not that great is a comparative term.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah, yes, not yes, great yes. enough.
Yes. Not as great as those at the sun.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is where things get interesting. It's been pretty pedestrian up to this point, I got to say. Like, it's kind of a bit of a snooze fest. But now that we've made it to the center.
You're not the one driving the drill. Yeah.
things are going to get interesting. And I wouldn't say this is the reason I was like, hey, we should do this random talk book when I text you. And you were like, where did that idea come from?
Yeah, it was pretty random.
But after I had the idea for this episode, I really started to think about it. And this is where the gravity really starts to come into play. And some of the stuff that I saw where people have like worked on this or like done some math and like people smarter than me, not smarter than you, obviously, Jason.
Is there such a thing?
Yeah. Have worked out some theories on how we could do this. They've basically said, all right, what if we could drill it and we do make this unobtainium tunnel?
Right.
Like we've created a pathway through the center of the Earth. The first thing that's really interesting, if you used basically nothing but gravity, no propellant, and you just had to travel the distance, you could get from Argentina to China. So, like, spoiler alert, that shit about my grandpa having me dig from Washington State to China is yeah. bullshit. It doesn't
Yeah, you wouldn't
line up.
End up in China.
You got to
yeah.
start in Argentina, That's apparently, right. which is bullshit.
Yeah, you would end up somewhere in the middle of the Pacific. Yeah.
if you jumped from, you know, the start of your borehole, it would take you 42 minutes to make the whole journey, which is crazy when you think about it. If our technology ever really does get to a point, now that's how much time it would take to cover the distance. But here's where it gets more interesting. And I haven't seen a good answer to this. And this is what I've had trouble wrapping my head around. At what point, Jason, from when you jump, do you stop falling and need to start climbing?
Oh, my God. There have been a number of movies that deal with this really? In very okay, ridiculous so ways. So yeah. I think it was the RoboCop remake had something like
movies.
This. We need to talk about the first RoboCop movie because that's genius. But we'll do that at a different time. The new King Kong Godzilla movie. Actually have this same premise really? Going on. Yeah, because okay. they deal with the hollow world okay. idea that there's like a whole different planet in the hollowness of, like, there's no liquid core. There's
okay,
like
I'm talking about serious science in this episode, Jason. Right. All right. I mean, come on.
So from a gravitational standpoint, yeah, if you could keep yourself from burning up and right. dying from the pressure.
So you're in an unobtainium tunnel at this point. Like you just basically free fell into the tunnel. Like you just base jumped. Right. Into this thing.
Well, you would increase and increase and increase in speed as the gravity mm-hmm. increased and your mass increased and your wind velocity,
the friction.
Yes. Yeah. Friction from the air decreased relative
to
those terms.
The tunnel would fill with air. That would be the biggest problem. So what I basically saw was it would be like a rubber band probably isn't a great analogy, but you would pass the center. Because you're slowing with friction, right? So you gain velocity to the point that the air friction, yeah. the friction from the air particles that you're hitting, and you begin to decrease in yeah. velocity. You're going to pass.
The term for that is terminal velocity.
Terminal velocity, right. yep. So yeah, you're going to pass the core. You're going to pass through the core at enough speed, enough
your
escape.
Terminal velocity will decrease the more thick the air is.
Right. Right. So you're basically going to ping pong ball, right? You're going to have enough velocity left to pass the core once. But then you're not going to have enough velocity left to escape the gravity coming out the other side. So what's going to happen? Your velocity is going to terminate, and then you're going to start to fall the other right. way.
Yeah.
Until you hit the core again, and you're going to get a little bit less high the next time you pass through.
It's basically the equivalent of an event horizon in
right.
a black hole.
And eventually,
right?
yeah. You'll just lose a little bit more, pass the core, lose a little bit more, pass the core, until you just become suspended. In the
it's
exact
like getting older.
Perfect center of the earth. yeah. So that's the part about this that just kind of like blew my mind is you would have to come up with some sort of like, I guess the question is stupid or not stupid. We could get to the center of the earth, not pass through it successfully and practically. But even as a mode of transportation, trying to move through the center of the earth.
Oh, I think this is exactly what Elon Musk's Hyperloop is trying to.
The Hyperloop is very submantle. Let's be fair, Jason. So this is the part of it that blew my mind.
Yeah, the idea that, yeah, once you get there, it's very difficult to get out without some form of propulsive technology. Like, right. It might be harder to get out than it would be to get in.
Unobtainium propulsion technology, is that what you're saying?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, but a laser is not going to give you very much propulsion, right? You would need right. something else, which would require more energy. Like, now we're back to the rocket equation.
Right. So that's just the piece of it that blew my mind. So we did it, Jason. We made it to the center of the earth, so I guess it's not stupid. Is
and
that
now
what
we're
saying?
Stuck.
And now we're stuck forever. So this is where I want to get to. It's interesting that you say that, because if you go back and listen to our time travel episode, Jason and I talked about, it wasn't time travel, it was immortality. So yes. I guess the connection's not really there. But Jason and I talked about the fact that eventually, like, the heat death of the universe, and we would just be immortal floating in a void of nothingness.
With nothing to do.
With nothing to do, like, no point to existence.
Yeah, you'd just go insane.
But I'm pretty much willing to agree with you that our journey so far has been pretty theoretical. I'm assuming you're going to say this concept is stupid. But there is one point then that I want to make, Jason, because I think there is one way we could pull this off. And I want to preface it.
Because I've actually got one too.
Okay. Well, how about you go first? I'll let you go first.
No.
You
want me to go first? Yours first. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I want to preface this by saying that when we did the episode I'm about to reference, you ended that episode by saying, kinda not stupid.
Right.
That was your final call on this, and that was our time travel episode.
Yes.
So let's remember here, the question is, stupid or not stupid, we could get to the center of the Earth. Not that, you know, we would live.
Right.
Not that we could get back.
Right.
Not that there would be a practical application for it, just that we could get there. So I started to think, you know, we ended our stupid, not stupid episode on the on time travel on, you know, the math actually checks out. The technology isn't there, but the math basically checks out that you could do this. But one of the things that we didn't talk a ton about in that episode is when you travel through time, you have to account for the relative position of the Earth. So right. If we worked out our time travel technology, Jason, we could essentially set our destination for a point in space and time at which we depart from at one time, but we know when we reappear that we would reappear where, Jason?
in the center of the Earth.
So we could time travel there by dropping ourselves into the exact precise point in space-time where the center of the Earth exists relative to the position that we left from.
See, this is an aspect of time travel that's always bothered me when it's been depicted in science fiction. It's not teleportation.
Right.
You don't so do you, it instantaneously.
You would most likely, unless you planned it out, just reappear in blank space. You're just floating in outer space, right?
Well, it's not that you would reappear. It's just that you are traveling in a different relation to the rest of the universe from a time perspective. But mass still matters.
Right.
So you would just get hit by the Earth.
I don't know why, but this just reminded me of my favorite hashtag from this whole show, from our AI episode, mistresses matter too, Jason. Mass matters and mistresses matter. It's 2022. So are you saying stupid or not stupid on my time travel? I think that's the most practical way right now to get to the center of the Earth, build a time machine.
I've got you beat. And it also comes from something that I said in a previous episode.
Okay.
And I think you're going to really like this one. And this is why it's actually not stupid.
Okay. All right. Let's do it. Are you about to say this whole idea isn't stupid?
Yeah, but you're not going to like the answer.
Okay, are you legitimately about to go not stupid on this? Because I'm about to have my mind blown.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
Yeah. So we talked about all the stupid ways the world could end. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that we talked about was nuclear catastrophe. And I alluded to the concept of thermonuclear warfare. And I said something to the effect of, we have enough nuclear weapons at this point that you could actually crack the planet in two. Well, I don't know that that's entirely true, but I could see how we could get there. We could actually.
So you're saying you're going to crack the planet in two and then just fly to the core?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
So with like the last semblances of our species, humanity's last act will be Jason like maneuvering the ISS into the core.
Planting the Calahandria flag on the core of Earth, the frozen dead core of the planet. Yeah.
You'll never take me alive. Okay. Well, I just want to say that I appreciate that we're being true to the source material.
That's right.
Yeah, we're leveraging previous episodes are we both saying here not stupid on this one? Because I'm sticking to time travel. You're sticking to like fissuring the planet.
Yeah.
I mean, are we there, Jason?
I think we might actually be. And I hate it when we agree on this.
Okay. Well, then I hate to ask, but do you have anything else on this one then? I mean, are we in harmony here?
I would just suggest that nobody give me a bunch of fissile material.
Well, then I'm going to suggest, Jason, that you and I have arrived together at that perfect 0G, 0 degree on the XY axis coordinate in the exact center of the Earth. And we can just exist in agreement in perpetuity for all of eternity at the Earth's molten core center. So congratulations. We did it, man. Cheers. All right. Until next time. Dig it up, up, oh. 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 You got
to go and dig those holes.
Man, I'm tired.
With broken hands and withered souls, emancipated from all you know. You got to go and dig those holes.
Hey, you slow, bro.